You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this wonderful day in Southern California. You know, very often you hear lots of inspirational talks. A lot of people talking about what ought to happen, what could happen, what should happen. And sometimes you find people who actually do things. And so today we have a guest who does both of those. Very inspirational. And also does things, especially with wells in rural Uganda. So welcome to the Pilgrim on the 405. This is Nick Jordan, the CEO of Wells of Life. So welcome, Nick.
Thanks, Will.
So tell us a little bit about Wells of Life in Uganda.
I love how you say Uganda, first of all. It's interesting that some people say Uganda and some people say Uganda. But either way, that's where Wells of Life is actually based. We're a 10-year-old organization. We're based here in Irvine in beautiful Southern California. And in 2008, I took a trip there to Uganda and found a tremendous amount of need, most especially for water. So in the 10 years that passed, Wells of Life has become quite a force to be reckoned with as far as bringing clean water and making water hygiene and sanitation programs available. We all know that you can't live without water. But however, when you are in a country like Uganda, where almost half the population live on a daily basis without having any clean water, it really becomes the driving force of your life. And that's why Wells of Life exists, to connect people, businesses, schools, families, individuals, and corporations to be able to fill that need and to be able to provide a water well, which incidentally costs only $6,000 and can be the answer to prayers and the answer to need for as many as 1,000 people. So we have a very growing organization. We have a staff of approximately 30 on three continents, obviously Africa, Europe, based in Ireland, and here in our own Irvine, California. So we're delighted to say progress has been made every day, and we're very thankful to be able to be on your show and to be able to speak a little bit about what Wells of Life is about and how people can get involved.
So, you know, Nick, one of the things that I find really interesting is in working with my clients with the entrepreneurial operating system is very often they will set a goal, and if they don't hit it, they will start beating themselves up and thinking somehow they've failed. And what I continually invite them to do is to reframe that so that there's no such thing as failure. There's either we achieve the goal or we're learning. And I've heard your story, and so there was a time in your life when you failed, but you didn't see it as failure ultimately, right? So tell us about that.
Well, I think the failure you're talking about relates back to 2006, 7, and 8, as we were sort of in the early, mid, and late stages of the real estate and financial recession. I did indeed have a different career back then. I was based, I had a company called Jordan Property Group. We were based in Laguna Beach. I guess we were what you'd call a boutique organization that sold real estate. We invested some funds, some of our own and some other people's funds, in real estate ventures. And quite frankly, everything seemed to be going really well. I'd been here in the country about, I guess, 15 years as an immigrant from Ireland. I saw that this was the American dream for me, and everything looked like it was moving along beautifully. But as we all know, what goes up can also come down. And my world essentially came crashing down about 2008. And all of the real estate investments that I had worked on for a decade essentially imploded as a result of the environment at the time financially. So what looked like a really difficult situation, and I would also say it was difficult, opened a door for me to take a trip to Uganda. And that trip was an invitation from another organization that I'd helped by raising funds to build four schools. My background is of a school teacher. I came from Ireland. I used to teach school. Always had a soft spot for education. And what better than provide a school or more in Uganda? So four schools later, I decided it was time to go and actually take a look and see what had transpired. And that trip took place in late 2008. And quite frankly, what I saw there opened up a whole new phase and a whole new part of my life. And that's essentially where Wells of Life was founded, on November 28, to be exact, 2008.
And that was a learning.
Well, it was definitely a learning. I would probably add to that, it was a learning through pain, suffering, disappointment. I think all of the adjectives that would say, I guess that added up to a catastrophic event that really looked like a big loss at the time.
Right. Was it a big loss?
Not from where I sit today. In fact, it was really a blessing in disguise.
So just to make clear, if you could roll the movie back, would you change anything?
No, I wouldn't change anything at all. Really emphatic in saying that, because I couldn't really imagine the old life that I lived back then. It certainly wouldn't fit in the shape of what my new life looks like today and every day going forward.
And if you could choose between the two?
Oh, I wouldn't hesitate in saying that I love the life that I live right now, part of a wonderful organization, and really feel very fortunate and blessed to be part of something that's changing the world.
And I think that's an important message to keep saying to folks. I mean, take risks, knowing that some of those risks are going to fail, but the failure is not a failure. It's an opportunity to learn, because on the other side of that failure or that lack of achievement is a whole new possibility that you didn't even see before.
I think as long as you keep going, and I would just like to add that, because I know I was very fortunate at the time to have a really strong mentor group. I've always had mentors, role models, and people that believed in me. Because when it gets that dark, and believe you me, when you lose everything financially, that's about as dark as it can be. I was able to move forward because people that believed in me continued to believe in me and point to what you just said, to finding the opportunity that existed there. And again, as I said earlier, just to keep moving, and little by little, one step goes in front of the other. And after a little while, it all starts to come into shape. And eventually, you know, we see that this is a new dawn.
Mm-hmm. God does seem to work through community very often.
Really, he is the ultimate, you know, community member. He brought us all together for a purpose, and honestly created us for a purpose. And I think part and parcel of this journey that we take, and I love the title of your show, Pilgrim on the 405, and I really had no idea what it referred to until I gave it some thought, but to be able to find out what our true purpose and destiny is, and then live it through action, to me is just a wonderful way to be a part of God's creation. Because these gifts are within so many people, and I'm sad to say that many people die with the music still in them. And that is really, to me, it's the biggest tragedy of life, to think that you have an infinite amount of time, many more tomorrows, which none of us are guaranteed.
Well, in a real sense, our whole journey here, our whole pilgrimage here, is one of learning.
If we're wise.
Well, we continue to learn, and if we don't learn, we're learning, right? This doesn't work.
Or we stay stuck, one or the other.
That's right, but it's that whole well-lived life is a life where people have learned and expanded and broadened and been much more inclusive of opportunities that maybe they would fear earlier.
I would agree with you, Will, and one of the things that I have noticed is that as people get older, they tend to start to close down their, what would you call it, maybe their periscope, and it starts to be a little bit limiting, thinking that, oh, you know, I've gotten to this age, and maybe this is as much as I'm going to do, or maybe this is as much as I can achieve. And they start to impose some restrictions on themselves, where ordinarily we're capable of doing anything until our last breath, as long as we choose that we want to do it, right, and to be part of something that I think is essentially much bigger than ourselves.
Well, that's interesting. I don't think I spend much time with people like that. The pilgrimage that I'm on up and down the 405 is identifying people for whom tomorrow is bigger than yesterday.
Well, that's wonderful.
Their future is always bigger than their past. And those are the people that I talk to. The other ones, maybe I just miss them, but I don't see a lot of folks like that.
Well, I can tell you where they are, Will, just for, you know, to be the opposite side of the conversation here, because you're obviously talking about, you know, the 1% or the 2% or the 3%. I've always said that one of the biggest lost resources of America resides in the nursing homes of this country. Mm-hmm. People that essentially go there or are put there that have lived full lives, that were capable, that were in corporate America, that were the movers and shakers, that were the captains of industry. But because of a certain age, they're essentially told that their wort is now diminished. And so I've walked and visited many people in nursing homes from time to time. And one of the things that I would really love to do is to be able to mobilize all of the hidden passion and hidden ability that exists there, because that right there for me is one of America's greatest resources that can essentially do so much good for not just America, but also for the world.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about part of my pilgrimage was for years I had read and listened to a fellow named Dan Sullivan. He is founder of a group called The Strategic Coach. He's in Toronto, and he's a wonderful coach for entrepreneurs. I think he's coached maybe 18,000 of them for now. And I always wanted to become part of his program, but I didn't feel like I had the money or didn't have the time, and it was just not something that I was able to do. A couple of years ago, I said, it's time. I want to do this. I discovered that the founder of the Entrepreneurial Operating System, Gino Wickman, was a student and had been a student for 15 years of Dan Sullivan. And I said, that's where I want to go. So I found out that he was working on his last two cohorts of a group called the 10X program. And 10X meaning, I didn't really know, 10x something, get 10 times your impact, 10 times your size of your business. I don't know what it was, but 10x. And so gonna put money and give it to Dan, right? And become part of his program. So as I was getting ready to complete the transaction, I met Dan and I said, Dan, you know, I've got a question for you. I really want to become part of your program, but I'm 72. Now, I'm looking out in the next 5 years with EOS, and, you know, I get 20 clients with EOS and replace the ones that move on after a couple of years. And I said, 5 years, I'll have a nice nest egg in the bank, and so why do I need to 10X anything? And he said, oh, Will, that's a great question. He said, you're 72, or 71, and you got a 5-year program. I said, well, I've never thought about it. I guess I do have a 5-year program. And he said, well, you're 71, I'm 73, and I've got at least one and maybe two more 25-year programs. So what is your 25-year program? So after that, I just said, here's my credit card, let's get going. And that's been the challenge for the last 6 months, is what is my 25-year program? What do I want to look back on 25 years from now and see what impact I have made? And now, I think that's the challenge for everyone. Wasn't it Kentucky Fried Chicken? Wasn't he like...
Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, but he was like...
In his 70s.
Late 70s, and right. He started the whole thing. I mean, right. I think I agree with Deepak Chopra. Age is a mindset. That's all.
The choice.
I don't really feel different from when I was 16, 17 years old. It's the same me.
Right. A wiser you, I'm sure.
That's possible. The body is there. And what it helped me in thinking 25 years, that meant that my exercising, my diet, my sleeping, all of those things were not just to make me feel better. It was to make sure to increase the probability that 25 years from now, I'm eating with a spoon. Right?
Right.
So I think that's the message that we want to give out to people, is what is your 25-year program?
But I would think, Will, to have a 25-year program, you would really need to have something to fill that program with.
Of course.
Right? So the important thing for me then would be, how can you really discover something that if you only had one last contribution that you wanted to make to this world, to this earth, as your legacy, what would it be? And I think that's a journey that is such a worthwhile journey to discover that, because it's not readily apparent. It's something that you have to go in search of. And I have, you know, story after story after story of people that discovered wells of life. And I'm only using this obviously for as an example, because there's many, many, many passions in life that people can choose. But we had one person that was, well, he's our president, and I love to speak about him on air because he's just one of my role models. His name is Pete Callahan. He had a very large law firm, not more than a mile from this studio. And he eventually decided to go to Uganda and see what was happening with his money. He had funded a well. You know, he came back from this trip and he told his darling wife of 50 years, honey, I'm actually giving up the law and I'm going to be the full-time leader of Wells of Life. And she, being a wonderful lady, said, well, of course, that's perfect, darling. But do we have to move to Uganda? And of course, he assured her that that was not part of the deal. But Pete Callahan has had the most incredible tenure as the president of Wells of Life, leading our organization for the past 6 years. And when you see somebody like him, who essentially had everything achieved, you know, the large firm, the retirement, the slippers, the golf, the country club, the boat, then for him to come along and say, the world doesn't need any more lawyers, sorry lawyers, it needs another person that's passionate about bringing water to all mothers, children, fathers, people in Uganda. And that's his commitment. And you know, when I see him today, I see such a light in his eye, because I know that until his very final breath, he is going to fight for one more appointment, one more well, one more donor, and one more opportunity to share this passion, which to me is a great way to live your life.
Well, that's right, because now we have a reason to get up in the morning.
Right? Very much so.
Well, and that to me is the message that I think we can really share with folks is that finding that unique ability, finding that passion, finding the things that we're good at and really love doing, and then going out and doing them. And when we do that, it doesn't run out. Nobody is going to retire you from that position.
No, and you get to do it with a group of like-minded people, which is what I absolutely love. I mean, we all know that, you know, you can go out with your golfing buddies and you can play a few holes of golf and chase that little white ball around the course. And then you can come back and maybe hit the 19th hole and you can probably maybe chat or possibly even BS about lots of subjects that maybe aren't that important, like, you know, whatever. But you can also end up with a group of people that are also doing work that is incredibly valuable. And maybe you'll end up going on a trip to a place like Uganda. And for the first time in your life, you're going to see the exact benefit of what your money does, which is a really big thing for Wells of Life, because many charities exist. In fact, there's probably 3,000 charities in America, at least. For a charity to be able to show a donor the actual effect of what their money brings is very difficult. There's just some of them that it's impossible. But for Wells of Life, we can bring that donor to the well they dedicate that has their plaque on it, their name or a loved one's name. We don't have to say anything, because they will be given more than likely a hug or many hugs by mothers who have received the water, whose children are healthy. And just in that moment, it's almost like a moment of amazing divine connection.
But isn't it a kind of an awareness? I mean, if my daughter or my son were to say to me, you know, in fact, my son does have wells in Western Massachusetts. If he were to say to me, our well is dried up, I need some help. Do you think I would hesitate to find a way to give him $6,000 to fill his, to make his well work?
Well, that's a great point, because, you know, I would pick up on it to the point where you spoke about this example from the position of being a father, being a parent. And, you know, that is indeed the case when we look at our children or our grandchildren and we ask ourselves the question, is there anything that I would not do to support, help, or take care of this little one? You know, what happens, Will, is when you travel to Uganda and you are confronted with so many beautiful children, that donor really has that same conversation. And they say, I've heard it said loud, and I know it's been said internally, there's very little that I wouldn't do to bring water to this little child, mm-hmm. especially knowing how little it takes and how little it costs to be able to do that. That's something that you never quite go back from. Because once you do something, you know, it becomes reinforced with the knowledge that this was good, felt good. Then I've seen people come back from a trip and they really take on a whole different journey.
And that's the point that I wanted to make, is that while water, delivery of water, making that provision possible is very important, even more important is that the transformation of one's relationship with the rest of the world. Because my belief is that Mr. Callahan came back with a whole different sense of who the people in Africa are.
Oh, he sure did. You know, there's just one great, there's a piece of film that somebody was rolling a video camera while, you know, he was in a moment of contemplation, and I guess, you know, they asked him to say something, and, you know, his words were kind of indelibly printed into the history of Wells of Life when he said, "I honestly wish I had heard about Wells of Life 30 years earlier." And that was really a profound statement, because all of us could say that, you know, what if we found out about an opportunity just a little bit earlier? You know, there's many people listening to this show and, you know, some are scratching their heads saying, you know, what is he going on about all this water for? And, you know, what's Will talking about? And, you know, you get to the point where you start to realize there's very few problems in life that are as easily solved as providing water to another human being. Mm-hmm. It can literally happen overnight, and to be able to bring life and hope and opportunity to another person, exactly what you said, your life becomes changed, because it's like you look into a different space and a different place, and you see that you are the person that are the change that you've been hoping for. You're the person that brings the water, brings the life, and then ushers in, you know, education as a possibility. That's a world changer for me.
And to me, that's the transformation that we're really watching right now. Now, there's a lot of pushback, and we're in a particular place economically, politically, where we're trying to be a little retrograde about it. But the transformation that I see is that we're moving from us against the other to an awareness that we're all in this together.
I would agree with you, and water is the one inclusive conversation. I've never met anybody could ever argue the point that, you know, that a child should die for lack of water, or that a child shouldn't receive water, or that every single person on earth doesn't have the right to receive water. And that becomes, to me, it's an incredibly good starting point, because if you could get everybody to agree on just one thing, then that becomes like the source of the Nile. Mm-hmm. There's only one source, and it goes on and leads on and spills out from there. Why couldn't we agree on other things? Water, hygiene, sanitation. And, you know, again, a world where obviously here in Orange County and California and the United States, I mean, we are blessed with so many opportunities and so many that we take for granted. And when it comes to knowing that, you know, you have water on demand, roof over your head, you know, a warm home to sleep in for the most part, you do have an opportunity of saying, what could I add just to a couple of other people that aren't that fortunate?
Right, right. All right, so let me ask you a question. Let's suppose that we were to get together again 3 years from now, and you were looking back and you were saying, I am very pleased with the progress. So over those 3 years, what would have had to have changed?
That's a good question. It's not one that I would say I have any prepared answer for, so you're going to put me on the spot. Best answer I can give you is this, Will. I would see what would have changed is that providing access to water and sanitation would have become not just a cause. It would actually have become a movement. And for it to go from being a cause to a movement, you would have to have everybody essentially put their hand up and say, I believe in this. I believe in this basic human right. I want to help. Maybe I can only help one person, but I want to make a difference. And that movement would have started to kind of begin at a groundswell. And when people think of the world, they would think of, wow, do you know, in one block of 3 years, we went from where we hardly knew anything about water except it's in a faucet, to where part of my family, school, church, and business is dedicated to bringing water to people I may never see or meet, simply because I know I can, I know it's the right thing to do, and I know it changes, you know, the world in a good way. That would be one thing. The second thing would be that Wells of Life would become a global brand. And I know that's a fancy term, marketing term or whatever, but, you know, I won't mention any companies because I am not biased. I like all companies equal as long as they support Wells of Life. But, you know, when you actually think about Wells of Life, we should be able to have an image that says, if you want to bring water as a basic human right, Wells of Life is the place to go, because they have a plan in place, and it's been built over the last 10 years, where your money will be used wisely. The results will be shown. You can visit your well, and as a result, you're going to tell more people about it.
All right, so providing water and sanitation to people becomes a movement. Everyone says, I believe in it, and I want to help. And then secondly, Wells of Life has become a global brand.
Right.
So what are the dangers there? What are the obstacles? What are the things that might get in the way of that happening?
Oh, the only thing that will get in the way of it happening, I believe, is that there are many other things that are vying for people's attention. We're all, you know, victims of the now, of, you know, what's right in front of us at this moment in time. And so to be distracted is very easy. To have the human compassion to be able to provide, you know, water for all and to support an organization like Wells of Life, it does take a little bit of time and thought and effort, you know, to make that a part of your dinner table conversation at family level. I believe the strongest unit, you know, on earth is the family. And if providing water as a gift of life becomes the conversation at family level, then I think it's a success. But I think we also fight against the many different challenges that the media would like you to think are all important, when, quite frankly, we all know that what the media wants you to hear and see are what sells, obviously, the TV, radio, and, you know, print media ratings. Sometimes you have to go beyond that a couple of levels deeper.
Would you agree with me that the media tends to see everybody as victims?
Well, they certainly haven't subscribed to the Wilchrist, you know, belief that, you know what, you can really take on an entrepreneurial role and you can be the change that you're talking about. So, yes, I would say that they are perennially looking at the glass as half empty.
Well, and that you can't do anything about it. Here comes the hurricane. Get ready, but it's coming. You know, here's the volcano. Here's the airplane crash. All of these things are places where, if we're not careful, we could begin to see the world is against us, that events are against us, and we do not have the power or the resources or the ability to make a difference.
Yes, I would so agree with you because, you know, I think that they would certainly like to condition people into a certain mindset, which isn't that difficult if you keep consistently hitting the same drum with the same drumstick, which is that drumstick that says, you know, there's terrible tragedy, the world is a terrible place, there's a lot of horrible things happening, there's all these things going on. And that may indeed be the case. But on the other side of that, the world is such an incredibly beautiful place. There are so many magnificent creations. The world is filled with stories after stories of inspiration. I mean, God's goodness, when you look across the landscape, whether you see it in the early morning or late at night, and you realize what a blessing we have been given. And the blessing to be able to serve another human being, to me, is the message that I think I would love to share with all of us. Let's serve our family, our community, our country, and then let's make our country able to go into places where they genuinely need assistance with the basic human rights. Not a freebie, but a hand up rather than a handout, which is what Wells of Life is
right. All
about.
And that whole message there, I'm not convinced that the media is somebody sitting someplace in a very bad way saying, let's make everybody a victim. On the other hand, I think your word for distraction is what happens is we get distracted into seeing the world as we're the victims of all of these events versus hearing over and over again about what it means to take responsibility and to make a change. And I believe that in a given day, there are more people making changes, taking responsibility, being actors rather than victims, than there are victims. But we just don't hear about it. And I think that's part of the testimony that we can share with people is you can make a change. You can contribute. You can make a big difference, whether it's for yourself. I mean, heart attacks are not, we're not victims of a heart attack, all right? We're not victims of most diseases. We participate in them coming to us. And so taking responsibility for that, taking responsibility for our families, and then for our regions and our country, and not saying, look at what they're doing, but saying, here's what I can do to make a difference. And I think that's part of the message that you bring from Wells of Life is, yes, we can bring water, but also, Mr. Callahan, you can participate in making a change.
Yeah, it's a two-way street, Will. And, you know, I love that you said that because that is exactly what Wells of Life believes. We really believe that we're a bridge. Essentially a bridge between two different places, two cultures, two different lifestyles. That bridge obviously has traffic that goes in both ways. I've never seen a donor at Wells of Life, even those that are our biggest donors, make a gift that they did not receive more in return. So, you know, people sometimes get the wrong impression about, you know, charity. And I don't like the word charity, but I'll leave that on the shelf for a second. Maybe even giving. What happens is that, you know, yes, certainly we give, but it's what we receive in return, to me, is what makes the whole exchange so perfect. Mm-hmm. Because it does bring our higher instinct to the surface. And, you know, I've been hugged by many people in life, thankfully, because I guess I'm a huggy Irish guy. But when I go to Uganda and a mom has been waiting in the sun for 3 or 4 hours, you know, for our group to arrive, and we don't exactly run on time all the time. So when we eventually get up and, you know, it's hot, it's sticky, it's, you know, sunny, it's, you know, the equator goes through Uganda, and you eventually get face to face with a mom that, you know, politely comes up to you and just puts her arms around you, and you get this big, gigantic hug, and you realize that's what this journey is all about. Maybe the journey to Uganda, maybe the journey of life. Mm-hmm. And what did it actually take of me? Nothing.
Right.
Nothing except the most important and most valuable thing on earth, which is compassion. Mm-hmm. And I do truly believe, like what you've said earlier, just to be able to build a world that is fueled by compassion, mm-hmm, can essentially deal with any challenge, any issue, any problem. That becomes lifting your game to a different level.
Yes.
And whatever age you're at, you know, whether you're a, you know, an athlete like our ambassador Austin Hedges, catcher for the Padres, or whether you, you know, are a guy like me that's, you know, touched over the 6-decade mark, and we've got our oldest donor who is 104, mm-hmm, Anthony McGowan, who's a priest down in San Juan. Doesn't matter what age you are. Youngest donor right now is 6 years old. So we have something for everybody. Mm-hmm. And the message becomes one of come and join us. Play your part. Make your contribution. Whatever it is, we'll be thankful for it. And as a result, I can promise you only one thing. You'll see the results. Mm-hmm. You'll see it show up in your life.
So providing water and sanitation becoming a movement where everyone says, I believe, I want to help. Wells of Life becomes a global brand. What are the opportunities right there between now and 3 years?
The opportunities are many. So I'll name just a few of them. We always love to start with our future generation, because it is the generation that I think today probably needs more support and help than almost any generation in the history of America, for sure.
We certainly heard that yesterday in the United Nations.
I'm
sure
we did.
16-year-old, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Why don't you guys get clear about taking care of it for us?
Right. So here's what Wells of Life is doing in this regard. So we invite our youth, mm-hmm, as young as, I think our youngest donor is about 6. So we have a program where we go to schools, go to each school and say, would you like to take responsibility for providing water, life, hope, sanitation to a community, to a school just like yours that is 9,400 miles away? And, you know, sometimes you get the reaction of kids look at you like, you know, you've said something that is from outer space. But then when I break it down and say, you know, guys, you know, the students in Uganda, in Mubende, in Mityana, in the different regions, they are just like you. They loved to play in water if they had it to play in. They liked to go to school sometimes. And so you can essentially be the people that changes the world for that group. I have never seen more buy-in than from 6 and 7 and 8 year olds that start to share ideas. Oh, could I do a car wash? Could I do a garage sale? Could I? And then there's the ideas that start to turn into service efforts.
And you're really pegging on their entrepreneurial spirit.
Well, you are, because there's nothing like the power of a young person, young child's mind, because it is unfettered. It doesn't have, blinkers or blinders on it. And so, I mean, again, we don't have time to discuss all of this, but, we have many schools that have literally just taken the Wells of Life school program and made it their own.
Well, one is St. Matthew's
right.
Episcopal School in
Pacific Palisades. This is one of our longest serving schools and churches that have really taken on the Wells of Life program. Every year I get an opportunity to go up and to speak with the Student Action Leadership Group. And every year I come out of there with tears in my eyes, goosebumps on my arm, and I realize that I didn't do anything here. All I did was drove up the 405 for a couple of hours and stood in front of a group of people, young kids that are the future of America, that said, we want to make a difference, and we believe in Wells of Life program, we want to fund a well. Now, they have now funded 11 wells, so they are our leading model. And so they've also now started to adopt schools, so their school kids can start having pen pals in Uganda, where the possibilities are then endless. I don't have to spell it out any further than that, because that becomes a domino effect that reaches far into that community. We go beyond that, Will, as well, to churches. We have had tremendous success, and we're a non-denominational Christian organization, so we have something for everybody. We truly just believe that, if we can be the action arm of Jesus in his the way of giving water to those in need, then that's what we're doing, and that's the good job that we're doing.
And so we want to go down to St. Margaret's School and St. John's School in Orange County, Episcopal High Schools, Episcopal Middle Schools, and we want to talk to them about joining Pacific Palisades and challenging their 11 well record, right?
Well, that's music to my ears, Will, because, when you become, an ambassador for Wells of Life, you do just what you said, which is essentially say, hey, why not my school? Why not my church? Why not my family? Why not my business? And my answer is always very simple. Absolutely. Yes, yes, and amen.
All right. Well, I have somebody else I want to introduce you to who will be excited about this. All right, so opportunities. What are the strengths? What are the strengths that Wells of Life has that will help accomplish providing water and sanitation as a movement that everyone says, I believe, I want to help, and helps to make Wells of Life a global brand?
Well, I'll give you three. There's plenty of them, but I'll give you three I think that are really important. One is that we are considerably blessed to have a challenge that we face where we're able to actually show results. So I'll just simply spell that out. And that is, a water well, as I explained, costs $6,000. A water well and a water hygiene and sanitation program costs $12,000. So it's, in a sense, when you provide water, you've done the part that is essentially over the water. So if you were to think about an iceberg, that part that exists over the water is providing the water well. The really critical part that not every organization sees or addresses is that big chunk of ice that's underneath the water. That's the lifestyle that has to be changed. That's the water, hygiene, sanitation, training, that there is no easy way to do it. You actually have to do that person to person, door to door, which is what Wells of Life is doing right now that sets us, again, apart. So that's the first thing. I think the results are there, and they can be measured by any donor that is looking for a 1x, a 5x, or a 10x, or 100x return on their charitable donations, so they can see the value of it. The second thing, that we've decided to set Wells of Life up on a sound business platform. I come from the world of business, and to me, if you can't measure it, it really isn't any point. There's no point in even talking about it because you don't know what you're talking about. So to be able to measure the results of Wells of Life, we decided 3 years ago to take on the poorest district in Uganda for lack of water, or the poorest district lacking water. It happens to be number 117 out of 117 districts, where only 35% of the people of that district have access to water. So you can imagine, do the math, there's a million people in the district, so there's 350,000 people that have water and there's 650,000 people lacking it. Even by Uganda standards, that's abysmal. So Wells of Life made a commitment, a five-year commitment, to bring water wells to every school, every church, and every major community in that district over 5 years, and essentially take it from the very bottom to the very top. I say this because this gives us the opportunity of being able to go to organizations that are large, that have large grants to offer, and that are able to look at our accounting and say, this is a good place for us to place our grant money. So we have 2 years to go. We currently are on track to deliver 500 water wells in this community. And the beautiful thing is, Will, we can measure this by talking to the urgent care locations. And they will tell you and show you in writing that there are less children dying from the horrible diseases of, you know, diarrhea basically is the biggest killer of children when there's a lack of water. So that's the second thing. Incredibly measurable, built on a very solid business practice. I guess, what did you say, strengths?
Now, you got, Nigo, one more that you've talked about that I want you to share is this large resource center.
I'm glad you invited that because that's the one thing that really gets me up in the morning. Again, coming back from my days as a school teacher, you know, if you can teach somebody to do something, all of a sudden you make them so worthwhile, employable, valuable. So 2 years ago, Wells of Life, our executive board decided that if we really wanted to make a profound and long-lasting difference in the water space and become the global leader in providing a solution to this critical problem, we needed to provide the training that would be essential to be able to train local people to become well mechanics, to become pump mechanics, and to be able to do all of the necessary work that would essentially have each community take care of its own needs. And so the training and visitor center in Mitiana, which is just outside of the capital, Kampala, has already been graded. We've already actually had the groundbreaking. We're in the very early stages of a capital campaign, which will raise $1 million to deliver a 14,500 square foot campus that will not only provide a training center, but it'll also provide a accommodation center where our donors can go and travel. The high school in Santa Ana are traveling with us in 2020 because they've funded six wells already as a high school. They have a group of boys and girls that are going to see firsthand what the results are from their work. So we want to be able to have the ability to have accommodation, dormitories and private rooms and conference rooms and the like, you know, for that trip. And then finally, we have our own, obviously, headquarters there, our global headquarters. And as I said, we're based on three continents. So that's where we're going to put our administrative offices. And finally, we're building a conference center so we can bring in other NGOs, so we can invite local churches to come and receive the ministry training that they so badly need. So essentially, that is going to be, I believe, one of the groundbreaking efforts that Wells of Life is going to
now, is
have
this where
to
you're
do.
Going to train women to make soap?
Yeah, you heard my soap story. Yes, I absolutely. This is one of my pet stories that I believe that everybody should have the ability to, at a minimum, be able to wash themselves and have the personal health and cleanliness. And yes, we are going to create soap making industry where we can teach the women from the local community or anybody. We won't discriminate. If a man wants to learn how to make soap, we'll teach him too. But that's going to be such a powerful driver of commerce because after water, hygiene, sanitation, education, the next step is naturally into the world of commerce, which is going to be driven by microfinance. And so I just going to allude only to this briefly, but projects like soap making give women in the local community something to work on and to be able to sell from a commercial standpoint, not just to supply their own village, but to actually trade commercially with another one.
10,000 villages. Do you know 10,000 villages?
No, but I hope you're not going to ask me to bring soap to 10,000 villages.
No, this is 10,000 villages is a commerce group that sells wonderful soap that I just bought 2 days ago.
Oh, my
And
word.
These are women from India in this particular case, but the whole notion is 10,000 villages around the world where women are supplying
I love it.
Varieties of things. They have retail stores all over the world. But I will share that with you.
Thank you.
Right?
Because that's the whole idea.
That's right. That's
I mean,
wonderful.
Water and soap, I mean, that goes together like, you know what, like Laurel and Hardy
that's
or
right.
whatever
Absolutely.
You want to say.
So this has been a wonderful time. I have really enjoyed having you on the show. So what would you like to tell people?
Well, I'd like to tell people that I'd like everybody that is interested to follow Will's example and to choose to become a part of Wells of Life. And what that is going to look like is very simple. So I'm going to give you a couple of very brief invitations. One, Wells of Life works tirelessly to be able to fund the work that we do. And we have a program that we've had in place now for some time, which starts essentially by asking for a contribution of $1 per day. And that is basically what we call our Water Warriors program. And I'm so thrilled to be able to say the producer of your show here is a water warrior. And I know that you know you will be shortly. And just, I mean, I say it kind of jokingly because, you know, if you can figure out a way to provide $1 a day, that is what's going to provide water, life and hope, you know, for tens of thousands of people if enough people become water warriors. The second thing is a biggest resource that we need at Wells of Life are people. Again, people that have a heart and a passion and a desire to bring their skills and talents to the table. Believe you me, we're building an army at Wells of Life, and there's a role and a place for every single person. So please, I'm going to give out my cell phone, if that's all right with everybody. Because,
sure.
Look, if you don't get me, I promise you, you'll hear back from me within the day, whatever length of hours it takes me to return the calls. But I'd like to talk to anybody that really sees themselves in a position at Wells of Life. And my cell phone is area code 949-584-6166. And I did
Once more?
Of course. 949-584-6166. I did this a couple of years ago, and it was so funny. There was a farmer on his combine harvester in Iowa, and he heard this Irish guy talking on the radio. He went home to his wife and said, "Honey, we're going to fund a well." I'm sure she thought he'd hit the pub on the way home. But the reality is this wonderful family funded two wells. You never know who's out there waiting for that invitation.
Right, right.
And that's what I wanted to do. We do have a great website as well.
Good.
It's called wellsoflife.org. So WELLSOFLIFE.org. And you'll be welcome.
And we can put the chaplains down at the Episcopal Schools of St. Margaret's and St. John's. Just put them on alert because we're on the way.
You've heard it on the airwaves from Will Christ. I have a feeling that you'll be hearing from him. Not from me, but you'll be hearing from Will. And I really look forward to having that conversation.
Super. Well, it's been wonderful having you with us. This is another example of how businesses in California not only thrive, but break beyond boundaries and move out into the world making huge differences. We all get rid of our victim mentality and begin to recognize we are gifted and blessed by the Creator to be actors, co-conspirators, co-creators in this world. So that great time to hear about even business owners that fail and break through to new vistas in success and wonderful contributions.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Christ.